In the summer of 2018, Layla Marie Ali declared bankruptcy. And it was a bit of a shock because she'd always been pretty responsible about money. She'd picked up a lot from her parents, generosity from her dad, savvy from her mom. The bankruptcy was largely caused by some bad breaks, but Layla started to see that there were other factors too, that she'd inherited from each parent a more complicated relationship with money than she'd realized. Layla produced an essay about her father, her mother, and money called Coincidence of Wants. She joined us to share some excerpts and some insights.
Well, I actually call him Mr. Ali. To his face, I call him Dad, but my mother has been married a few times. And so I've got a few father figures. So just to keep it all in my head straight, my mom, when she met him at the bank, she was a bank teller. She always referred to him as Mr. Ali because Sarakh was a little hard for Americans to say.
Mr. Ali. All right. Mm-hmm. So we're going to hear a little bit from your essay, A Coincidence of Wants. And this is a little excerpt about Mr. Ali and how he relates to money.
For him, there was always someone in the old country, be it Somalia or Yemen, that needed his last dollar so much more than he did. And he gave it to them. He gave it all to them. To know poverty so intimately that no matter what you have, you feel completely unworthy of keeping any of it is a depth of understanding that he knew I would never be able to relate to, and so he didn't try. The past is the past, Baba, he would say. Why you want to go there so much? I'm a historic tour guide, I want to say. I know everyone's history but my own. Instead, I say nothing. The story I often tell myself is, why bother? He won't understand me anyway. I've never known a person to give away more money than my own father. I am both proud and frustrated by his attitude toward money. Growing up, during our brief limited visits together, if we passed a homeless person on the way to whatever restaurant we were going to, he always gave them a few singles. If he didn't have any small bills, he would save his change after the meal and go back to give his change to that person. He often dropped me off to my mother's apartment with a couple of bills, always an irregular amount. Sometimes a few 20s, other times a few 100s. Whatever he earned that day, that's what he gave. Mr. Ali paid no child support regularly. That wasn't his way. If he saw you, he gave. If he didn't, he wouldn't. It wasn't malicious, careless, or thoughtless. It was cultural. What is child support to a Somali anyway? A very strange custom for someone more familiar and comfortable with nomadic culture. Love and support is given in person. When we were together, he gave me the world as he understood it. And so when I was looking back over my life about how I actually was with money, I was probably the most thrifty person in my family. And this has to do with how generous my father was with me, because he would send me home with any amount of money that he had. And because all of my needs were already taken care of by my mother, I would come home and I'd show her the money that my dad had given me, because my dad would tell me to give it to her. And my mother would always look at it and just say, go put that away. And so what does that even mean to a five-year-old? I just hid it somewhere in my room, maybe put it in a drawer or something. But it was never something I was expected to use in any way. And so I became a saver at a very early age. And so when I did go bankrupt, it was odd to me because I've always thought of myself as a thrifty person. And as for my father and that relationship, watching him give away so much money, I always got upset with him. Then I remember thinking, this man is taking care of what felt to me like an entire village in two countries and not taking care of us as well as he could be.
So on the subject of debt, that seems to relate a lot to the other half of this essay, or the other piece in this sort of couplet, which is about your mother.
Right.
So tell me just like a little bit about her and what she looks like and stuff.
So her name is Charlene. She's short, like me. She's about 4'11", and a little dynamo. And what I know of money primarily comes from her, but both of my parents, I would have to say, are examples of what not to do with money.
Yeah. Well, you write so beautifully about Charlene. I wonder if we could hear an excerpt of this. This is, again, from your essay, A Coincidence of Wants.
All right, this is back when she was Mama Bush. At the end of the month, Charlene would help her mother come up with increasingly creative ways to rob Peter in order to pay Paul. Making a dollar out of 15 cents was more birthright than skill in the projects, but there were many rules to the game, rest assured. Mama always had a method to her madness. Rule number one, always pay the rent in full and on time. Rule number two, always pay friends and family before creditors. That also happens to be the code of the street. Always take care of the neighborhood, and the neighborhood will always take care of you. Outside of that, anything goes. She learned to float by just making minimum payments to creditors, and if the minimum was too high, she learned to call for a rate adjustment. If multiple bills were owed at roughly the same time, she called the creditors first and worked out a payment plan. Pay each of them half of whatever fraction you can manage, but pay it on time. All things through communication. On time was a big deal. Where she was short on cash, she was long on integrity. If Charlene could talk to you, she could always negotiate a deal. This ability to intuitively see through the capitalist matrix of the U.S. economy, to know intimately that the value of something is artificial and arbitrary, that we assign value to objects, and that objects don't assign values to themselves, felt like a superpower. You want $50? Charlene said, nah, bruh. I'll give you $25 today, and you can hit me up next month plus interest. And people trusted her because she was a woman of her word. Layla, be true to your word, she said. It's all you have. Because when they stop believing you, you done.
Thank you for reading that. That seems like a kind of pretty sophisticated way to handle debt.
To have that level of skill with money at such a young age is phenomenal. But where that didn't serve her, I think, is ego or cockiness, because she got so good at it that she took more risk than she could possibly handle. I mean, it was a juggling act. And if one ball fell, then the whole thing fell apart, you know? And that, I watched that happen to her on more than one occasion growing up. Well, she as a parent reminds me of the father in that film, Life is Beautiful, about the kid in the Holocaust and how he made a game of the whole thing. So we were impoverished. I was born in a homeless shelter for abused women. There were times when we didn't have enough food, but life was a game for Charlene. And one instance in particular I'm thinking of was we didn't have enough milk. And without missing a beat, she just went in the freezer, got the ice cream, put it in a bowl, and poured Cheerios on top. And you couldn't tell me and my brother that we hadn't won the lottery that day. So those are the kinds of creative things that she would do. And in that way, I think a lot of my creativity comes from her and having to think outside of the box.
If part of this bigger project was to excavate your own history a little bit and understand how it got you where you're at now, what did you find, like, around the bankruptcy?
That probably had to do with college. I had the loans, but I also ran into trouble with my parents' divorce, my mother and my stepfather in particular. There were some loans in my name, some loans in their name. And when they got divorced, neither one of them wanted the debt. At some point, I owed, let's say, $5,000, and I had something like three or four business days to come up with it. And I called my parents, and, you know, they were going through their own problems. So my mother suggested going and getting a credit card. And that was the first time I ever got into debt. And then it just snowballed. Here's the crazy thing with bankruptcy. When I applied, my credit score was very high, like 780 or something. So that's where that integrity comes in. I paid those debts, and I paid them for a long time, on time. Now that's my mother. just like her, moving around the debt, robbing Peter to pay Paul, calling, negotiating for different rates as needed. This is what made me feel like a good person. I knew I was a good person because I took care of my responsibilities. It's just that the debt was too much for my income and for who I was. And I was never, ever, ever gonna get ahead. But if you face it and you go, I'm never gonna win this game. This game is rigged against me. All of a sudden, I was like, I can forgive myself for this. And I knew I was going to end up, my dad is poverty stricken right now. So he's an old man living the way he grew up. But I was able in the process to separate the emotion from what's happening. So when you think about what is money, it's a tool, but it's also an agreement. It's a huge societal agreement that the number printed on this bill is what we say it is. What I remember is I was simply breaking an agreement. It's like breaking a promise. And that doesn't feel good. And you don't want to break your promises. But if you've ever been a parent, you know sometimes you break your promises. And then you restore your integrity. And so that's what I did. That's how I view the bankruptcy. It's just a broken promise. I can't pay this back. I'm not going to. I'm going to know that I'm a good person, to let this go and then restore my integrity by setting up a better plan. So this thing in life happened to me, and I could keep paying the sins of my parents, or I could just forgive them, forgive myself, and just let that be.